What if you could cut through the noise in the online business world and learn from someone who has built a real business? We verified the numbers and combed through the P&L. This is not only a real business, but a real asset that people want to buy. We're going to pull the curtain back and give you the insights this entrepreneur has discovered that you can use to level up your knowledge, whether you're looking to buy a business or looking for inspiration to take your current business to the next level. Hey, listeners. Welcome back to the Real Money, Real Business podcast. Today, we're going to be looking at a business that has grown to be making over $50,000 every single month by utilizing Amazon FBA. The business also has two different WordPress sites set up for both of its different brands, so that is opportunity to grow the business off of Amazon, but it's just fascinating how large it's been able to grow utilizing Amazon traffic. I was able to sit down with the owner of this business to figure out, you know, how this business came to be. Thank you for coming on here today, Dan.
Thanks, Jake. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Sunny day here today.
Yeah, it's pretty sunny here in Florida. Great day. And I really appreciate you taking the time to get on with me today. Before we get to the questions that I have for you, I want to go ahead and run through a little quick summary of the business. Again, yeah. It was built in February 2016, has a monthly revenue of $208,902, expenses of $158,198 to make for net profit of $50,704, which is generated on a 12-month average. Included in the sale of this business are 12 SKUs, the Amazon Seller Central accounts, one for US and Canada, one for EU, marketing services account, Amazon Web Services account, Amazon Associates account, four branded WordPress sites, social media accounts, UK trademarks, and professional accounts for tools. Please note that inventory is not normally included in the list price. Further details can be provided to active depositors. Dan, can you tell us a little bit about your background in building and running online businesses and what led you to these two niches?
Yeah, sure. I've always been a sales and marketing type of person, entrepreneurial spirit deep within. And basically, when I was working as a sales rep for a drug company, I started running an eBay business on the side, and that spilled over into selling through retail arbitrage on Amazon, where I was like buying products and then selling them again. And then I started down the route of private label, and I built up my first Amazon business in 2014 and sold that in 2016 and then started this one with the money that I generated from that.
So why did you decide to start an Amazon FBA business rather than setting up on your own Shopify website on your own e-commerce platform?
I think the reason for that is mainly to do with the giant that Amazon is. They can deliver you such vast amount of customer traffic and you can get your product in front of their huge customer audience very, very quickly. I think that once you know how to rank the products up to the top of the search results in Amazon, then you are pretty much set for the life of the product as long as you continue to maintain a competitive price and also a high quality item. Whereas with Shopify, it's not really like that unless you build up a huge brand where customers know and trust you as a company and they come back to buy more and more similar products. You're relying more heavily on pay-per-click advertising with sort of the Shopify model. Not to say that that's wrong, but I think that the way that we've done it is through Amazon, and I think that that is a very effective model.
And clearly it has been effective for you. You've built $1 million business here, seven-figure business, and that's quite an accomplishment, and I'm looking forward to figuring out just how you did it. But why have you decided to sell it today?
Yeah, well, in my entrepreneurial journey, I think now I've been doing this for about 4 or 5 years. As I said, I've already built and flipped one. This will be the second one. I'm wanting to move into a different arena, into the SaaS arena, software as a service, and also release some capital from the business so that I can buy a new house, basically, is the long and short of it.
Definitely makes sense. So when talking about the two niches that this business is really in, which side of the business makes up more of the revenue?
I would say it was a pretty even split, to be honest. The health and fitness side has more products, but the beauty side has a product in the US which sells a great amount per day. And therefore, it sort of makes up. I think the last time I had a look at the accounts and split it down by marketplace, It was a pretty even split as 50-50 between the two brands.
You mentioned that there's a product selling in the US. Is there only one product that is available in the US?
Correct.
Do you feel like there is a market for the rest of the products to be brought over to the US?
We have actually already tried that, and some of the products didn't do as well in the US marketplace as what they were doing in the EU marketplace. And we put that down to the customer base being different. So these were the fitness products, and they basically just didn't fit the marketplace like as well as they do in the EU. That's not to say that some of the other products that we haven't tried in the EU marketplace could be taken across. Plus, based on the stuff that we got from the launch when we took some products across from the EU to the US, we could take that feedback and we could make some slight variations to the products so that they would fit the US market. But we decided not to do that just because it was easier for us to select new products than to try and make a product fit the marketplace. In my eyes, Jake, I think the Amazon model, in terms of the FBA model, it works really well when you find a product that works well for that market, not try to make a product fit that market. And I think that's where the opportunities lie.
So is that the biggest thing that you would say contributed to your growth on this million-dollar business? Is it recognizing where different products needed to be?
Correct. Yeah, I think it was making sure that we had the right product for the right marketplace, not being scared to test it in the other marketplaces as well, but quickly coming to a decision as to whether that was a product to continue in that marketplace or whether that was a product to discontinue in that marketplace.
Mm-hmm. So you've been running it for 2 years now. Did anything happen along the way that is kind of a learning experience that you'll take with you into other ventures that you do?
Yeah, I think going on the same sort of path there, where we took the products that were doing successful in one marketplace and we expanded them into another marketplace. In the EU, we expanded pretty much all of our products through, in fact, yes, all of the products throughout all of the five European marketplaces, simply because through the Amazon Pan-EU program, it allowed us to ship all the products to the UK and then list them for sale on all of the different EU marketplaces and just have one central stock. And then Amazon would control shipping them all over the place to customers. And one of the things we learned through that process was to get very high quality translations done. Because in the beginning, what we did was we reached out to some people on Fiverr and basically got the UK listings translated into German, French, Italian, and Spanish. And that went okay. The sales sort of did okay. And we got with Facebook ads to do the launches. We also got those translated. And we sort of gained a little bit of traction. But then we started to get more and more customers saying that although it was technically correct translations, they weren't really written in a way that either a German, Italian, Spanish, or French person would speak. And it wasn't coming across very salesy. It was coming across a bit like what I would expect when we read instructions in English that have been translated from Chinese. They do make sense, but they don't really make sense, if that makes sense. So what we then did was we employed some German, Italian, Spanish, and French copywriters to take the English listing, have a look at it, and then rewrite from scratch how they would write sales copy in a native language, using the English one as a reference, but absolutely in no way, shape, or form copying it. And what we ended up with was a collection of listings in all of the different languages, which weren't identical copies of each other, which were written in native forms in sales copy. And the sales took off in all of those countries. We stopped getting complaints from customers. That was one of the best decisions we ever made, because that really gave us a strong foothold in the other smaller, but significant when you add them up together, marketplaces.
Talking about the business as it is today, what do you currently need to do to maintain it as is? I mean, you're making about $50,000 on average in profit, which is a big number. So what needs to be done on your part, the owner, to maintain it at that level?
In all honesty, very, very little. Now it's got to the stage where basically it's a case of emailing the suppliers when we need stock, checking the stock maybe on a weekly basis, but to be honest, there's also softwares that can do that. My business partner really enjoys Excel spreadsheets, so I leave that to him. He spends maybe an hour a week doing that, and then maybe another hour a week emailing the suppliers in terms of getting purchase orders put in and so on. Then the maintenance of the actual Amazon site is all done by our virtual assistants. We have two of those, one in India and one in the Philippines. My job within the company is basically to see where we can grow the business, and that generally comes through adding in new products. So that's in terms of product research, having a look to see if there's any other similar products within our niches that are up and coming trends that we can then hop on the back of. But to be honest, I've been taking a little bit of a step back from that, in that I'm wanting to grow the SaaS side of my other business. And therefore, I think I probably spend an hour a week maximum on the business. So you're talking about 2 hours on my business partner, an hour a week from me. So 3 hours a week.
And that could even be brought lower if you set up software to do what your business partner is doing.
Yeah, exactly. So you could, there's plenty of softwares out there that will keep a track of your stock and forward forecast what inventory levels are going to be sold through in the next 12 to 18 weeks, for example. And then it will automatically ping up an email either directly to your supplier saying put another order in, or you can get it sent to yourself as a notification. But to be honest, there's a lot of stuff that we're using already. There's one called Cash Cow Pro, which is sort of a profit and email software that we use within the Amazon business. And that one also keeps a track of what you've got in stock. And so you can very easily, like, say, what have you sold in the last 30 days? And it'll give you an average of the sales per SKU. And then you can just put those numbers into a quick spreadsheet saying, this is how many we're selling on average per month. This is how many we've got in stock right now. How many days is it going to be until we run out? How many days is the lead time? When do we need to reorder? So it's not a very complicated activity. It's just something that does need to be kept on top of, because obviously stock is cash. So if we run out of stock, we stop the sales of that product, stops the profit generation for that product.
Are the two VAs that you're currently working with willing to continue working with the business when a new owner takes over? Have you spoken to them about that?
I haven't spoken to them about that, but I would have to assume that they would.
Mm-hmm. So what exactly is being done on the business in terms of marketing?
We don't really do a great deal of pay-per-click advertising. The stuff that we do is rank the products up to the top of the Amazon search for all the keywords that I do my research on to make sure that they are the relevant keywords. Once they are ranked after launch, then it's pretty much a case of keeping the conversion nice and high, which means maintaining a competitive but not ridiculously low price, having a super high quality product which comes with all of the relevant instructions that customers are going to need so that you get very low return rates. And then externally, we also run a little bit, I'm talking $10, I think it's $10 a week in Facebook ads. And that's just to top up the traffic with sort of so we use like landing pages to get people to have a look at the information. And then the people who come through to Amazon are then very likely to purchase. We send them through special links so that Amazon thinks that they are searching a specific keyword. And then they help towards the conversion for that keyword. We then also run a little bit of Amazon Marketing Services, which you mentioned was one of the accounts that's included. And that basically is the ads that you see at the very top, the headline search ads. And also it is ads like, for example, if a customer searches for a keyboard and then they click into one of our competitors' products, and then it comes up with a little advert on their page that says, why not buy our keyboard? And what that does is it sort of steals the traffic from them. It counts as conversion for us and it counts as a negative conversion for them. So we see those as pretty good adverts in running. We'll maybe spend $300-$400 a month on those. So there's not a lot of external and on Amazon paid traffic generation. It's mostly, I would say 95% of our sales come through search and buy.
There are four branded WordPress sites coming along with the sale as an asset. What exactly are on those sites right now?
Basic information. It's just a brand site, basically. So if we take the keyboard as an example again, it would be like steelkeyboards.com, and then it's just basically got a homepage with a bit of information about the keyboard, and then maybe if it's a brand with a few different products, it'll have like lots of different product pages. It'll have a contact us page, an about us page. It'll have some like basic FAQs, which will get updated if we get like regular questions from a customer. It's all just so that we can have the presence of a big brand without being a big brand, so that we can have the web address on all the packaging so that customers can then go there and get additional resources like videos of how to use the health and fitness products, ebooks on how to use them. The beauty line will also have like makeup videos that have been produced by YouTubers. So it's basically just all content. There's no way for customers to purchase products through the site. That's not something we've explored. What we have got on there is Amazon affiliate links. So if customers do land on our products by like recommendation from a friend, then the links that are on there will take them to Amazon, and we will generate a commission for sending people to our own products, which sounds sick, but it is actually true.
You're double dipping right there.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously Amazon charge you 15% commission on the sales that you make of your products on Amazon, and they then give you back 8% of that as a referral commission. So we basically split the commission fee on our own products with Amazon. It's not huge amounts, but obviously it helps when you're doing product launches to also track which adverts are being successful. So for example, if you've got like 3 or 4 different launch ads running, which are taking customers to 3 or 4 different landing pages, you can then have a different discount code for each one, and you can send them through the Amazon affiliate links, and you can see in a combination of how much traffic is going in through Amazon affiliates and what sales you're getting and the discount codes that are being used as to which ads are successful and which are not.
If you were going to keep the business, what opportunities for growth would you focus on?
The main line of growth in pretty much any FBA business is adding more products or adding existing products to more marketplaces. I think that the second one we have exhausted, in my opinion. I think that the products that we have them in the marketplaces that are successful. So the next line of growth would be to add in more connected products.
Do you feel like there are any risks associated with this business that a potential buyer should be aware of?
I think the risks with this business are the same as the risks with any Amazon FBA business, and that is the main one being that Amazon is the owner of all the information that you put on their site. So as soon as you list a product on there, they basically own all that information. And because it's their playground, they can do whatever they want. So you will hear horror stories of people who do get products suspended, who do get their accounts suspended. But I think that we mitigate a lot of that risk in that we have really high quality products, which we have like very good quality control on. So in terms of getting a product suspended, the vast majority of people who have that happen to them have got a product that is not very good, that customers are regularly complaining about. They're getting high return rates, they're getting bad reviews. All of our products have really good reviews. You're talking 4.5 stars and above in terms of rating, and they have like hundreds, if not thousands, of reviews per product. Customers really like them. We've constantly evolved them to what customer feedback has been given. And now we're at the point where we have, I think of the products as like a castle, and our reviews are the moat around it. So they are keeping away all the competition, and also Amazon don't come close to us because they know that we're a good product with a load of reviews around us. In terms of your account getting suspended, again, I think we mitigate that in that we follow all the rules. We don't do anything that is against Amazon rules. We make sure we are whiter than white. If they say that you can't have a text on your main image or an icon on your main image, a lot of sellers will do that because they know they can get away with it for a certain amount of time, but we won't. We will have exactly the image that they ask us to have. We will follow the rules. We also have never used anything like review clubs, which had a big fiasco in October 2017, where lots of sellers were getting mass reviews taken off and sort of their accounts suspended because they'd basically been paying for fake reviews. And that's never something that we've done. We've always relied on getting reviews naturally because they are the ones that are the most believable anyway. Other than that, I think I had sort of had a bit of a nervous feeling about what was going to happen with Trump and his China trade war. as to whether we would end up on the list of products that would incur the additional 25% duty. But since he announced the latest list of products, we still aren't on there. So the product that we sell in the US has managed to avoid that. So I don't really see any huge risks other than that it is Amazon's playground and they can change the rules at any time. But as I say, I think that a lot of that risk is mitigated through the tactics that we use as a legitimate Amazon seller instead of trying to just do everything black hat.
Are there any big learning sources for you, whether it be a blog or a podcast, that has helped shape you as an Amazon FBA owner that our listeners may find advantageous as well?
Yes and no. I think that one of the main things that I did a long time ago in 2014 was Amazing Selling Machine through a company called Amazing.com. And that's Matt Clark and Jason Katzenbach. And they started their private label journey a long time before that and have been teaching people ever since. And that course is like they open the doors once in a while and it always like sells out in a few days. And it was really, really good to give an initial idea of the whole model in terms of how to source products, how to private label them, how to set up an Amazon account, all the basic steps. But it didn't really give you like all of the information that I know today in terms of how to rank the products and how to keep them there and sort of how to deliver excellent customer service and all of the little aspects. And I think there's not really one resource that gives you all of those things. In the beginning, for the first 2 years, like really and sort of dipped my toes in a lot of different podcasts. So I listened to the likes of Manny Coates, I listened to Scott Volker, I joined some Facebook groups. I also became part of like a seller meetup in London when I lived in the UK. And I would go and physically meet other sellers and like chat about tactics and stuff like that. But in the last year, I've sort of shied away from that because what I found is that a lot of the resources that are put out there, because there's so many sellers out there who also listen to the same resources, I find that as soon as that information gets out into the wild, it becomes ineffective. So they might be talking about a new way to get reviews, and then a week later, that method is old hat and it doesn't work anymore because either it was a trick or a hack and Amazon have shut the door, or it was something that it takes a long time for it to be implemented and therefore it just didn't really work, or lots of sellers jumped on it and it's not really making any difference anymore. So I think that my biggest learning curve in the last year has been really taking the time to listen to what customers are saying and thinking about it from an actual brand's perspective and think, trying to take a step back and like step out of the, I'm a private label seller selling products that I'm getting from China and shipping to customers all over the world, into I am a health and fitness brand, I am a beauty brand, and this is what my customers are asking for. And that has really helped to shape not only our customer service model delivered through our virtual assistants, but it's also helped to evolve the products, like I said. And I think that it's also helped me to choose and select other products that we've then added into the lines based on what customers have been asking for. So I think it's one of those things that it's always said but never done. It's like listen to your customers and give them what they want. But I don't think many people do that. I think a lot of people are just looking for a trick or a hack or a quick way to make lots of money on Amazon and not necessarily build a legitimate brand on Amazon.
Would listening to your customers and really listening to your customers be your big piece of advice to someone starting out? Is that what you wish you had known when you started?
Yes, definitely. I think that when you really do listen to what they are saying, and it comes up a lot, if you aren't making those changes, then you are basically shooting yourself in the foot. If every time you open up your customer service report from your virtual assistants and there's lots of people saying that you're stainless steel keyboard, you really wish that it had a number keypad on the right-hand side, and you just ignore that. And then one of your competitors brings out a stainless steel keyboard with a number keypad on the side, and all of a sudden your sales start to dip. Whose fault is that? You should have listened.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Dan, if you could put yourself in the shoes of a buyer taking a look at this million-dollar business, why do you feel like it's a business worth buying?
I think for me it comes down to the simple fact that I and my partner have done a lot of work to get this business to where it is at. We've done a lot of brand building. We have come up with some really great ideas that are intuitive that not a lot of other sellers are doing. We've also now streamlined it to products that are generating a successful profit margin every single month consistently. And we have expanded those products into all of the available marketplaces. From a buyer's perspective, this is a case of picking up a passive income that is generating a lot of money, or they can pick up this business and they can add on some more connected products and they can grow it to much bigger.
Dan, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and share this business with me today.
Thank you.
If you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe to our channel. If you want more information, the link will be below the video that will take you to this marketplace listing. If you're watching this on the listing site, a Walmart information, become a depositor today. When you make the deposit, one of our business advisors will be in contact with you. You'll be given everything you need to review this business. Have a great day. You've just learned how this business works, and I want to give you the opportunity to learn more about what you can do to buy real online businesses just like this one. If you want to find out more about businesses making real money, head over to empireflippers.com and sign up for a mailing list. There is an entire world of people quietly investing their money into online businesses and seeing great returns. Now, we want to help you do the same thing.